Welcome to another brilliant sport and lifestyle biz here on your Real Feel Good Radio, UK Health Radio. This week, we've got a couple of famous superstar female athletes on the radio. And unbelievably, it's the last show in February. We're into the third month soon already. We've got Holly Doyle back on the radio talking again about her 2022, her injury, an update and her targets to get back and what she hopes for in 2023. And Vicky Lozada, part one again from Vicky of how she made Barcelona her home. And despite a couple of moves, it will always be. Throw in our SLB Sports Roundup and we know you're just going to love the show. Well, everybody, joining me today is superstar flat jockey Holly Doyle. Hi, Holly, how are you?
Morning, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, really, really well, thank you. Appreciate you giving your time up, even though I know you're probably in the middle of physio sessions at the moment, which we'll come on to. Hoping you had a good Christmas and New Year to start off with.
We didn't really have much for Christmas, to be honest. We were in Japan and we rode on Christmas Day, so Christmas was cancelled for us, but we were back for New Year, which was nice.
Yeah, that's nice. And quickly, what was it like spending Christmas abroad?
Different. I mean, like, in Japan, they do celebrate Christmas, but not to the degree that we do. They celebrate New Year a bit more, so we kind of forgot about it this year.
Yeah.
Because obviously we're there on our own and not around our family, and we were working, so it was just cancelled.
No, exactly. As you say, you know, your careers are taking importance at the moment. The only reason I ask is I was speaking to Anna Hopkin, the Team GB swimmer, and she spent Christmas with her boyfriend, but in Australia, because they had a training camp for the upcoming World Championships later in the year. And she said it's totally different. You know, they spent Christmas on the beach. So they sort of effectively cancelled it as well, if you see what I mean. So it was nice to get an insight of what you and Tom did, having almost done the same thing.
Yeah, we didn't do a lot of them work, really, but it's fine to be in Japan riding. It was worth giving it up for the year, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like a fantastic experience, which we'll come on to. Aside from Japan last year, which we spoken before about, and we in advance, even before you went, you were telling me what an amazing opportunity it was. One on your bucket list, I think, we spoke this time last year. How did you feel 2022 went? Another massive hall of winners, Holly. Classic winner, big winners, more big winners than you can sort of shake a stick at. I mean, what an incredible year. Tell us a little bit of your highlights and a couple of things that stood out.
Yeah, it was a massive year for me. I mean, I got my first classic winner, and that was something I dreamt of for a long time, and I didn't think it would come so quickly, but, you know, Nashua has been a bit of a revelation, and the association with him and Al Sagara has really taken my career to the next level, so things went very well.
Yeah, she's an amazing filly, and I think I mentioned in one of our interviews towards the end of last year that this time last year, you kindly gave me sort of three horses that you were looking forward to riding. I think a couple of ones that most people expected, which was Glenshiel and Trushan. The one you threw in there was Nashua. I mean, obviously riding the filly, you've probably got the best opinion on her, but did you actually expect her to go as far as she did?
Well, obviously it's always hard to tell, but we always knew she was special even after her first run. To be honest, at Newmarket she didn't win, but we knew she was going to be special, and I'm not really surprised from what she's achieved.
Brilliant, and great to get one, your first classic winner for your boss.
Yeah, it was dream come true. It was an amazing day, and thankfully she's staying in training this year, so I don't know if there's anything that's going to compare to that first classic win, but hopefully there'll be some more group ones in the pipeline.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be. As I said, you've ridden a number of group ones now. Great to get the first classic. I know it's sort of stretching the mind back about 6 or 7 months, but when you went over the line for your first classic win, I think she ran brilliantly. I think you had her quite close to the base and she took it up and never really looked like getting beat. It was a lovely ride on a great filly. What was it like when you sort of pulled up and you were actually thinking, wow, I've got a classic? Did it take some time to sink in, or you were expecting it?
Well, we knew she had a really good chance of winning. I knew she could win. I knew she had the ability to win. And when you're in that position, it's kind of down to you as a jockey to get the job done. So I thought she could win. But, you know, once you've crossed that line in front, it doesn't sink in until you've finally accomplished it. So it was just a great feeling, you know, looking back in my career, like, 5 years ago. I obviously dreamt of it, but yeah, never imagined riding a classic winner for John Gosden.
I know. I mean, it makes me smile when you just say that. Mohamed Al-Sagar, it's John Gosden, it's a classic winner. Absolutely brilliant. You know, even going back the 2 or 3 years we've been speaking about your riding, and even now how far you've come. I mean, I'm no expert, but in all sport, I sort of have a view because of what I do. And I tend to judge the best, the races they win that they may not. Although they shouldn't, rather than the odds-on shots they sit on, if that makes sense. And everybody makes mistakes, Holly, but you definitely make less than most, if not any, you know, you're right up there, Holly, and it's a pleasure, obviously, to chat to you about it. Pleasure to see you get that group one. Fully deserved everything you get, and one of those, which we're going to come on to now, was one on your bucket list, which we've mentioned earlier. You wanted to go and ride in Japan, and I think it was a 2-month stint you had over there. Tell us, A, how that opportunity came about, and B, what it was like.
Well, with Japan, you can't just pack your bags and turn up. You have to go through an application procedure, so you have to have been in the top 3 in your championship and have ridden a certain amount of Group 1 winners in the year before. So, thankfully, I qualified, but, you know, plenty of other jockeys will have applied too, so it's whether the GRA will take you on or not, and thankfully they took Tom and I both on, so that was just a real, you know, honour, really, to have been accepted our first time, so... No, we got accepted, and once you get the place there, you have to stand on your own 2 feet, really, and it's a different world, and you have to rely really heavily on your translator. You know, they have to get you a job, a sponsor, and an agent, so it's a step into the unknown, really.
But well worth it?
Yeah, it was worth it. I mean, it was an amazing experience, and I was really, like, passionate about the race in there, and, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I didn't ride as many winners as I hoped, but I got a lot of rides and support, so it's somewhere that I really want to go back, and Tom also.
That's fabulous, to hear. It is a new venture, knowing how competitive and how brilliant you are. I know you'd have wanted to ride more winners, but you still got on the board. You know, it was your first time. What is the opportunities over there for women jockeys? Is it a little bit behind Britain, or is it advanced, like the general sort of racing?
I would say... there aren't many females that actually ride there, so they haven't established as much as we have in England yet. But, I mean, there are plenty of really good riders. You know, Nanako Fujita has achieved plenty, and there's some really good apprentices coming through. So, you know, it's going the right way, and they're really dedicated jockeys over there. So I think over the next 5 or 10 years, it will really change. So it's kind of in a process at the moment.
And obviously that's really, really good. From my understanding, there's a lot of money that goes into the sport over there, and it's reflected in the prize money and the horses and the levels, effectively. So great that not only are the opportunities seem to be growing for women, that actually you got accepted. That must have been like a major confidence boost to you as well.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like, I even got accepted. Once I was there, like I say, I was frustrated quite a lot at the time because I just couldn't get the quality of rides that the other foreign jockeys get. But there have been plenty of jockeys that have gone there in the past that have struggled as well with that. So something that you've got to get on with and be persistent with.
Yeah, and I think something you said a short while ago, the key to it for me was that you got plenty of rides. There wasn't any trust lost. The fact you got plenty of rides just shows that you were accepted.
Yeah, I mean, I built up some really good relationships with trainers out there. So, I mean, I probably need to prove myself a bit more. But after this stint now that's under my belt, maybe next time when I go back, things might be a bit different. But you never know.
Good. And as I said, a great start. If I could just ask, I mean, I know that you're totally individual in your career, and it's something that you've always made a point of saying that, you know, you are yourself, if that makes sense. But was it nice to actually have that first experience over there with Tom, you know, with someone that you've got total trust in, someone obviously that you have a relationship with? Just, it was nice to share that experience with him and help each other along.
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, like you say, it's a really different country and there's lots of new things, so to have some company whilst you're there is great, because I'd say, you know, a lot of the other jockeys go out on their own and can become a bit lonely, really, with the language barrier, but thankfully we were together there at the same time.
Brilliant, and that was great. All in all, 2022 was an amazing year for you. We've obviously covered your highlight, which was your classic win, but you had many highlights, too many to actually mention, which is great. We've covered Japan, which, as we mentioned earlier, was on your bucket list and something you ticked off in great style. Had some winners and looking to go back, which you've qualified again for next year to apply again, because you were joint second, weren't you, in the championship? And obviously you were there last year, so that's a good thing. We'll move on to 2023 now, Holly, if that's okay. Obviously, we're very early in 2023. You haven't been back long. Sadly, there was an accident on a horse that you were riding, and you've come off with an injury, which can always halt momentum, but obviously your connections over here are stronger than most. Tell us about the injury, not actually what happened during the race. Just tell us about the injury, and I know it's a bit of a how long's a bit of string, but have you got an estimated time that you're out for?
Well, I don't really know yet. I'm targeting to be back on the 18th of February, but I don't know how realistic that is until I see the specialist again at the start of the month in February. Yes, me, but you know, it could take a month, it could take three, because unfortunately I ruptured all the ligaments around my elbow as well as breaking it. So I obviously want to get back as soon as possible, but for me, I want to be at my best when I do come back, because I don't want to have any weaknesses or let anyone down. So
yeah,
I'll be sort of trying my best and doing everything I can, you know, in my rehab. People keep saying, oh, enjoy your time off, but you know, it's not a holiday, it's not a break.
No.
It's harder work for me now in the rehab than it would be going racing every day and working, to be honest.
Yeah. And you or Tom, I know you push each other, which is healthy and fantastic, and you're not one to take days off anyway, even when you're fit, are you? You know, you would ride every day if you could.
Yeah, like, I'm used to riding all year round, every day, and riding winners all year round, and, like, you know, obviously it could have been worse, and it could have happened at a worse time of year, because at the moment it's your weather season, but, like, I'm used to riding all year round, so every day matters to me.
Yeah.
That I'm missing.
Absolutely. It is frustrating, I can imagine. I can tell in your voice you're frustrated, which I understand. The length of time I've known you, I know you just want to go out there and ride winners, ride, winner, winner, winner. When you're not on the track, you're riding out or you're in the gym. Do you know what I mean? I know you're 200% into your horse racing and you're riding. But as you did say, your injury could have been worse, and it could have happened at a worse time, which is less important, but it could have happened at a worse time. So if you're thinking the way that the season unfolds, and then perhaps Japan or who knows Australia in the future, it's probably the best time, if it was going to happen, is now. 18th of February, Holly, that just shows you that you are a bit of a machine. I don't mean emotionally, I mean physically. Obviously, I deal with footballers and they have a lot of ACL injuries, but that's just their knees, isn't it? But your elbows, I presume, are just as important as your knees, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully it was my elbow, not my shoulder, so they think that I should be all right. But, I mean, maybe the 18th is optimistic. If I can't get back for the 18th, and there's a big meeting in Qatar, which is where I want to ride at that.
Right, but okay.
My target will be the end of March for the turf season. That's my ultimate priority, really, to get back.
As I said, I know you are 200% into your riding. Is there an opportunity, if you feel sort of fit enough, to ride at Qatar, then to have a month off and get yourself ready for the end of March? Or if you're back, you're back and you're just going to carry on flat out?
Yeah, we'll have to see what they say, but because it's the ligament, you know, if I've spent all this time trying to help them heal, and then I go and something happens in Qatar, or I strain it, and then it just wipes out all that time I put into it and puts me back another 4 weeks, that would be frustrating. So I probably won't ride unless it's 100, you know.
It could ruin the big races over here or the start of the season. So you mentioned you were doing rehab and you were doing extra things to make yourself better. Ligaments, in some cases, are worse than breaks because of, as you said, you know, a break, you can fix it and it mends stronger. Whereas ligaments, you've got to go a bit careful with. What things are you doing? I've noticed you've been going for cold swims, or even you've got an ice bath at home.
Yeah, luckily we've got a Brass Monkey ice bath, which we're really lucky to have. I use it every day anyway, so thankfully it's there and it can only help, can't it? And I mean, I had a dip in the lake yesterday, the boys went off and swam around, but obviously I can't swim with one arm.
Of course not, no.
I just stood in that. It's just good for you mentally to get out and do things like that, and it can only help.
No, of course. And before we start saying that you're crazy doing that in this weather, obviously we know it's for a specific point. We had a little chat before. We spoke about the cryo chamber, but you've actually found out from people that the ice bath is the equivalent.
Yeah, I asked a few people because quite a few jockeys have used it.
What was it like the first time you dipped into the ice bath? Was it a shock to the system?
We've had it like 9 months now, and it was, a massive shock, but I got better in it over time. But that stint in Japan, I didn't have it, obviously, so I had to train myself back to get used to it.
Just for people that don't know, what does the mechanics of an ice bath, what does that do for your recovery?
Obviously, it's like shocks the body and then stimulates the blood flow and then increases the blood flow to the damaged muscles, or helps the recovery to be a bit quicker, really.
Yeah, again, it just emphasises the point that for all those people who think riding horses is all glamour, you know, and no hard work, your body's, even when you're fit, they do go through a very high workload, don't they?
Yeah, it's like we perform every day in racing, and like, you know, it's your choice whether you want to train or not and do the extra bit, but I like to do it, I enjoy it. So you don't really have any recovery time because you race 7 days a week, so your body does take a bit, really.
Yeah, it does. And to be fair, Holly, you've only got to look at yours and Tom's results to realise the full commitment that you both throw into it works.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to ride to the level that I do without doing what I do behind the scenes, really.
Brilliant. Well, Holly, I'm not asking you to unearth a Nashua, or even if you're allowed to unearth a Nashua again, but are there any horses that you're looking forward to riding this year, or anything special that's on the horizon?
Yeah, I actually didn't ride in First Mat because I was in Japan, but my boss Imada Sagar has a nice horse called Intinzo, 3-year-old colt by Sini, Rose and Miracles, who won on debut at Newcastle, and you know, he's bred very stoutly and he looked nice on his debut, so we're really looking forward to seeing what he can become this year.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. And also, you know, the special horses, you tend not to push, do you, first time out? So obviously he's won because of ability.
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Gosden's horses, they always know enough, but they tend to come on, and he won quite convincingly. And in time, we'll tell how strong that race was. But I know everyone involved with him really likes him. So I haven't yet sat on him, so I can't say too much.
No. Absolutely not. And I suppose the target is, as always, ride as many winners as I can, win at Royal Ascot, another classic win, or at least one classic win, maybe one in England, but anywhere will do.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I want to ride Group 1 winners and travel the world, so yeah, I'll be trying to do.
Yeah, so hopefully Japan on the horizon again. I understand Tom's going back to Australia. He's so successful over there. Is there something that you might want to follow him next year?
Yeah, I really would love to go to Australia. It's just the time he goes there for the job I have at the moment doesn't really work for me. You know, he's there from February, March to the beginning of April, and my job with Archie Watson at the moment always entails me riding those months quite heavily. So at the moment, my circumstances are a bit different to his, but in the future, it's a place that I'd love to go and ride.
I'm sure you'll get there, Holly, and Breeders' Cup again would be nice, I presume.
Yeah, that would be nice. I mean, I've ridden there twice now, so to have the experiences under my belt, because it is the world's best racing, you know,
and the American
version of Ascot, really. So for me to be able to even go there and ride is just a real privilege. So we hope we can find something to go out there again this year.
Brilliant. And yourself, apart from, sadly, the elbow, everything else, fully fit, every focus to go out and ride as many winners as you can in 2023?
Yeah, definitely. You know, hopefully after this, I might come back even fitter and stronger, you know, having the time to do that now. You know, you've got to make use of the time now that I've got on the sidelines to make things better.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Holly, I know I've taken up a lot of your time today, and as always, you don't know how much I appreciate it. You know, you're top of your game. You are exactly what the radio show asked for, a professional, successful sportswoman. And whenever I talk about you to the girls that we train football for, you continue to inspire them. So for that, thank you. For the interview, thank you. And hopefully we can catch up again soon.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Well, everybody, joining me today is Manchester City and Spain superstar footballer. It's Vicky Losada. Hi, Vicky, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Really, really well. We appreciate you giving time up in your busy schedule to give us the interview today. You're a superstar footballer, you play for your country, you play for Manchester City, one of the biggest clubs in the world. If we could start off, though, just going back to the start, so the listeners and the girls that are listening get to know a little bit more about you. When you were growing up, how did you find your love for football? Was it instant, and were there good opportunities for girls in Spain?
I mean, definitely was instant. Wherever I go when I was younger, I always bring a ball with me. My brother used to play football, so when I was probably 5-6 years old, I already used to go to watch his games. So it's a football family also, so I think it was in my veins. When I was younger, I think we didn't have as many opportunities as the girls have now. I started playing with boys, and I didn't play in a women's football until I was 14 years old,
Okay, yeah. So a couple of things you pointed out there, Vicky, a couple of great points. You said you had an older brother. Do you think that helped you? We coach a lot of girls, and we can tell the younger girls that have got older brothers and sisters that get to play with their older siblings in the garden.
Oh, yeah, definitely, 100%. I used to play with him. A lot of fights, I have to say. Always the youngest get all the blame. But also, for me, something that is not happening now is playing on the street. Right. I used to play in the street with the boys, and that's not happening now, no. Sadly. I think that's actually something that really helped me to be the player I was after.
Yeah, and you're right, that is very sad. I mean, that's just typical with life, isn't it, sadly? Yeah, you don't see many groups kicking the ball around in the street anymore.
No, it is sad, actually. When I see some, it actually brings me back to my memories, and it was actually one of the best times of my life.
Yeah, you're right, it's a real shame. It's sad that society is like that, but on the other side, whether that's one of the reasons or whether it's just natural progression for women and girls in the world, the opportunities are much better now, which is obviously great to see. People like yourself, I know, give time up as well to pass on advice and coaching of young girls, which is fantastic. You said that at the age of sort of 13, 14 was when you started to play with girls because the opportunities were not so much. And you joined La Masia, which is Barcelona's youth system. How did that occur and what was the experience like?
I used to play, so I started when I was 7 in boys team, and then I moved to a girls team under 14 in Sabadell, which is the little town where I am from.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they always have people watching the girls, and one of the managers from Barca came and they said they wanted to sign me. Sadly for my dad, because he's a Real Madrid supporter.
Oh, crikey.
I did sign for Barca, and it actually was the start of an amazing career at home for me. Barca is my home.
Yeah, and as we'll come on to many times, you've been at the club on and off for such a long time. It clearly is your home, as it were. In 2016, at the age of just 15, you actually made your first team debut, which is unheard of over here. What an achievement, and what was it like making your actual first team debut at such a young age?
I mean, it was actually amazing because now you can see more girls making their debut at that age. Back then, the opportunities I had, they were nothing compared to the, I don't know, good managers, good infrastructures in the clubs nowadays.
Yeah.
So for me, it was just amazing how the manager I had back then, he really believed in me. Because to be honest, sometimes in football, you also have to be lucky or have that person that puts the eye on you and says, I'm going to believe in this girl. And it was just amazing. Actually, I think I was 15 and the youngest after me was 19 years old and I was playing with women that were 30 years old. So it was a great experience for me to grow quicker than probably I would have done going through all the categories before the first team.
Yeah, that gives you obviously first-hand real-life experience, doesn't it? So it really does push you on at an early age.
It does, because I had to work harder. I couldn't say no to anything. I just had to find myself in a group of really old people, and that was the best learning for me.
Brilliant. Again, just going back to a couple of points you made, and a couple of points I'd like to mention on that. First of all, you said it was amazing. The manager had the belief in you, which is obviously always needed. There's a saying that we have, right place, right time. And obviously you were playing in the right place when the Barca scout come to see you. But all in all, it's still down to you to show that desire, that ability, that hunger for them to put you into the first team at that tender age.
I mean, I always had the talent.
Yeah.
That is something that I think I was born with. But you also have to develop that. And then you have to have also hard work every day. Passion for me is really important. You have to have passion because that is what is gonna show you the way all the time. Because sometimes it's not always nice in football, in sports. There's always hard moments, but you have to keep doing the things you do every day and being disciplined. And I think back then I had really difficult moments. I remember I used to be such a bad defender. I never used to defend because I was very young, so they used to score a lot of goals when I used to lose the ball. But you know, all these things, thanks to the manager also, me, show me the path. And I'm so lucky that I had that back then.
Yeah, again, brilliant for you, but obviously you did have that talent, as you said, but a good point you make is hard work and passion. Hard work, because no work at all gets you nowhere. That will be the first thing that brings you down. But passion, because as you said, it's never always going to be easy and you need to be passionate about it. If they're hard times, you know, get yourself back up again.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And also, I always say talent without work doesn't get you anywhere. And you can say it now. And I think for me, I was thinking about football every day, every hour, getting back home, watching the men's game, because sadly back then couldn't watch many women's football. And thinking about football, I never had time to meet my friends, really, because I used to train 4 days a week and then I was traveling on the weekend. And back then also, all the travel was in the bus, so it was really, really hard coming back Monday morning, back to school, so it was a lot of dedication.
Absolutely, and obviously with all your schooling as well, it was a very busy schedule.
Yeah, it was, and you have to be disciplined, and I think sometimes also in football, you're expecting results quick because you're anxious when you're younger, but I think the work that you do every day, in the end, it pays off 100%. I'm a big believer of that.
Yeah, and you are 100% correct. So obviously, you, as we said, you started off at a very young age in Barcelona. In 2007 was one of your moves away, but that was not triggered because of anything you did. It was because Barcelona actually got relegated and you wanted to stay in the top level. You had an amazing season for Espanyol. You played 24 matches. You scored 3 goals. Do you think that was important to your continuation of the high-level football you were playing, the fact that you actually stayed in the top tier?
It was, as much as I never wanted to go to Espanyol, because it's actually the biggest rival of Barca.
Okay.
But I knew, for me, as you know, I was very, very young, and it took me a lot of time to adapt to that level and to kind of have the rhythm of my life. And for me, just going back to a second division, I thought I had to make that effort and just push myself and keep challenging myself and stay in the highest level.
Yeah, again, another good point of your focus and your dedication.
The end made me be successful, I guess.
Yeah, I couldn't have put it better. Absolutely correct. However, your concern about moving to the biggest rival of Barca was actually only for 1 year, because Barcelona got promoted back up to the Primera Division, and of course you moved back to them. And that started a time of 7 years at the club. You played 165 times for them and unbelievably scored 47 goals. You know, that's nearly 1 in 3 games. That's absolutely fabulous. I mean, that must make you very proud and something you can look back on with very good times.
Oh, yeah, really good times. And I always, like, one of my targets also was to be that kind of box-to-box midfielder, but also have an effect in the opponent box.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really easy to play also with girls in Barca because we've been learning from the same style of football for years. And in the end, after 5, 6, 7 years, all that work, it just shows up. And I always say, it's a Spanish expression, maybe in English, I always say, we were able to close our eyes and knowing where my teammate was, where the ball was going to go, where the pass was going to go, and that is really nice. You just have to enjoy after that.
It does make the game easy, or easier.
It does.
Yeah,
way easier.
You're talking about being a box-to-box midfielder. Just a couple of quick questions that I can throw at you, Vicky, because for me, the answer isn't always the same. What would you say your best position was on the pitch, and what would you say your favourite one was?
Tricky one, actually, because now that I'm older, I always loved the number 10.
Yeah.
100%. I always like to play between, you know, the opponent back line and their midfielder line, just in that pocket. I love to be in that pocket, just, and on the left side, because I really like to just get my shots on target.
Yeah.
So if you play on the left side, my first touch always was inside and I always had the goal in my mind. But with the years, in Barca, especially these last years, I really enjoy that position, number 6. That's how we call it in Barca, which is the midfielder that's in front of the 2 center backs.
Yes.
And I think it's really important because you just kind of give the balance to the team. And I think now, being older and more experienced, you make better decisions. And I think I really enjoy that position over there.
Yeah, and you're right. Reading the game in that position is very, very important, isn't it? Obviously, and you've got to be able to play both ways. It's a very tricky position, actually.
It is, and when you play for Barca especially, you just have to make sure not just making good decisions, not losing the ball once, because normally we are attacking so high and the counter-attacks are really, really dangerous. But as I say again, it was really easy to play with amazing players beside me.
Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. So part of that 7-year stint in 2011, which, from looking at it, probably started the avalanche of trophies, was the Copa de la Reina. And that was Barcelona's first trophy. You started the game, you won the final. What was it like to win that trophy for such an iconic club?
I think for us that was a before and after, I guess, because the first year I played when I was 15,
yeah.
As you said, we got relegated. So we weren't the best team, which a lot of people would say, what? So yeah, we were the last on the table. And I think after that trophy, that Copa de la Reina, we knew where we wanted to get. And after that, it's just been a lot of trophies and also just the mentality of yeah. every year being a better team. I think also the club has done really good signing new players, that maybe foreign players from another countries that also were giving us another options. And when you want to play in Europe, you just need a bit of everything.
Absolutely. So do you think the winning 2011 was a combination of things that led to this avalanche of trophies? You went on to win Premier mm-hmm. Division 3 or 4 times, 2 more Copa de la Reinas, all in a short space of time. Do you think it was that, with a combination of that added belief and, as you said, signing new players? Was it a combination of everything?
I mean, the new players came later. We were all Spanish players, and I think it was a result of a lot of work, passion, yeah. and also really talented players. I have really good memories from them years, like showing really good football. And then the only thing that happened is that we were never able to get through quarterfinals in Champions League, but we still always get yeah. into Champions League every single year. So
yeah.
it was always a progress.
Brilliant. So almost the evolution of the team, really, and you just all mm-hmm. grew together, and it resulted in 3 league titles and 3 cups.
Oh, yeah. And then after that is when we signed the new players, because yeah. there was a target in the club that we wanted to do better in Champions League.
Of course, yeah, absolutely. So before we go on to that, in 2014, you actually had a taste of football in America, which obviously for a long time had been considered the number one, the whole thing for football mm-hmm. in the world. You signed for Western New York Flash in the NWSL. First of yeah. all, what experience was that, and how did that come about, that move?
In 2014, I already won 5 leagues, and yeah. I was 23, and I was already the captain of Barca, and yeah. I just felt like the club, believe it or not, it was getting small for me, and I just started feeling a bit comfortable, and I wanted bigger challenges,
yeah.
and the Spanish league wasn't professional. The offer came from USA, and I could say it was a dream, but it wasn't, because sadly for me, I didn't have any role model to look at and say, right. I want to be a professional player. So I guess I was brave, and I took my chance, and I went for everything, and I crossed all the ocean to the other side and far from my family to kind of make my career professional.
Yeah. And was that hard to live away from your family?
It was very hard. It was very hard because I think the 23-year-old
yeah.
that I was, it's not the same that a 23-year-old nowadays.
Oh, no.
You didn't have internet, you didn't have anywhere to communicate, really. So it was really hard. I didn't speak a word of English, like nothing.
Wow. Yeah, that's very brave then. And taking that into consideration, did you enjoy your time there?
I did enjoy my time there. I think it made me stronger physically yeah. and mentally. And then I realized that there was an opportunity and a possibility to be a professional footballer. And I wanted to develop over there, to come back home and say to the girls, listen, you can be a footballer if you want, if you work hard. And back then I would say, maybe you have to leave your country, but now you don't have to, because I'm very happy that women's football is developing the way that it is.
Brilliant. Absolutely fabulous. And obviously that did give you another taste of football, but still not satisfied, still wanted a different challenge. You signed for Arsenal in 2015. What was it about the WSL or English football that excited you, and was the challenge that you wanted to take up?
I mean, I enjoy America, but I think the football in Europe is different. And the big Premier League, I mean,
yeah.
everybody knows the Premier League is the best league in the world. And I used to watch games also when I was younger. And just coming here, it was a dream, coming back from Western New York Flash, where I was so happy and I'm so thankful, because they gave me the first opportunity to be a professional footballer. Yeah. But coming back here and a big club like Arsenal with all the history behind, it was actually a dream. And I actually enjoy it. We won 2 trophies. And
you did.
I have really good memories also from that time in
Brilliant.
England.
No, that's lovely to hear. As you said, you won 2 trophies in 1 season, which is fantastic. And the whole WSL and the experience, did it live up to what you were expecting?
I mean, yeah, it was. The Spanish league wasn't professional, so the club was amazing. The training yeah. ground was amazing. I came here to 24-hour routine, having breakfast in the training ground with the first team, meeting the guys, having lunch, having training, gym sessions. They're normal things now, but it wasn't back then.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
This is our SLB Sports Roundup featuring golf, horse racing, darts, cricket, motorsport, NBA and football. We start with golf and the PGA Tour return to order with the win of new world number one, Jon Rahm from Spain on minus 17. He dominated the tournament for the last couple of days and held off Max Homer by two shots, who was on minus 15, and Patrick Cantlay by a further shot, minus 14, to win the Genesis Open. This week, it's the Honda Classic from the PGA National Members Club in Palm Beach, Florida. The DP World Tour held the Thailand Classic from the Amata Springs Golf Course in Chonburi. And it was won by back-to-form Torbjørn Olesen, who came second last week and produced a brilliant performance, shooting minus 14 for the last 2 days to take the title on minus 24. He was fully four shots clear of Yannick Paul and a further two of Juus Luiten. They go to India this week for the Indian Open at the DLF Golf and Country Club using a Gary Player course. The Ladies European Tour held the Saudi Ladies International from the Royal Greens Country Club, and it was won by world number one Lydia Ko on minus 21. She held off Asha Ashok by a shot on minus 20 with a three-way tie for third from Manon de Roy, Alexi Thompson and Lilia Vu. The tour's back on the 1st of March for the Joburg Ladies Open. The LPGA is back this week with the Honda LPGA Thailand Classic from the Sharm Country Club using the Pattaya Old Course. Horse racing. Some results from last weekend, and it was down to very small fields at Ascot. The Reynoldstown Novice Chase was won by Oscar Elite, trained by Joe Tizard, ridden by Harry Cobden. The Swinley Handicap Chase was won by Captain Nord, trained by Christian Williams, and ridden by Jack Tudor in fine style. The Ascot Chase, wow, that rolled back the years. A back-to-form Shiskin, one of the best horses in the last 10 years, wound back the years to show a brilliant performance in a new extended trip. Even though we expected that he'd like the extra distance, it was still nice to see him put the race to bed, and he won the Ascot Chase in convincing style for Nico de Boinville and Nicky Henderson. And now on to the Ryanair Chase at the Cheltenham Festival. At Haydock, the Grand National Trial was won by Quick Wave for Venetia Williams, ridden by Harry Bannister. Venetia is well renowned for these staying chasers. Quick Wave won at Sandown first time out, then disappointed after an early mistake in the Welsh National, but she also had the form. Stable jockey chose to ride one of Venetia's other two horses in the race, but Quick Wave put them to bed and ground out a great result. This week, we've got the Ida Chase from Newcastle. We like Kitty's Light or the Galloping Bear, and the Coral Trophy from Kempton with Ansam Remastered and Our Power are ones to look on to take the field. Darts Premier League Week 3 was at Glasgow, and it was won by back-to-form world champion Michael Smith, who collected 5 points. He beat Dimitri Vandenberg, who's been a revelation so far in the competition. 6-4 in the final, Dimitri claiming 3 points, and the two beaten semi-finalists, Nathan Aspinall and Johnny Clayton, each getting two. The table's quite congested at the moment, with Michael Smith and Nathan Aspinall leading the way on 7 points. And then four players on 5 points. Gerwyn Price, Chris Domi, Dimitri Vandenberg and Michael van Gerwen battling out for the top four. Round four this week is at Dublin. Cricket, England, who are back in test action, have provided a brilliant performance to beat New Zealand in their own backyard convincingly by 267 runs. New Zealand won the toss and put England into bat in a day-night game, and England scored freely, declaring on 325 for 9 to put New Zealand into bat under the lights. They skittled them out for 306, although it was a great rearguard action from Tom Blundell, replying to Harry Brooks' 89 in the first innings. New Zealand was shut down by James Anderson, 3 for 36, and Ollie Robinson, 4 for 54. England come out and batted again. Joe Root this time getting 57, Harry Brook 54. A total of 374, leaving New Zealand needing 394 to win. But they were skittled, 126 all out. James Anderson, 4 for 18. Stuart Broad, 4 for 49. Putting the great iconic duo of English bowling into the world record leading place for number of wickets taken. They now sit at 109, having passed the legends Shane Warne and Glenn McGrath, who are on 1,001. It's a second test this week. Motorsport, we have one event to report on. The biggest event in the NASCAR calendar, the Daytona 500 from the brilliant, iconic raceway. And the race was won by Ricky Stenhouse Jr., driving the Chevy Camaro for JTG Daughtry Racing. Current champion Joey Logano was second, Ford Mustang for Team Penske. Third place, Christopher Bell, driving his Toyota Camry for Joe Gibbs Racing. The standings after two rounds see Joey Logano out in front again, trying to defend his crown. He's on 52 points. Second place is Chris Buescher, driving the Ford Mustang for RFK Racing. He's on 50, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is in third on 48. This week, they go to the Auto Club Speedway, which is a two-bank super speedway D-shaped track for the Auto Club 400. Formula E are also back this week with round 5 of the South African E-Prix from Cape Town. Watch out for reports next week on MotoGP and, of course, Formula 1 that is back very, very soon. NBA, a few results here from last week because it was the All-Star weekend. Cavaliers 117, Spurs 109, 76ers 123, Rockets 104, Heat 108, Nuggets 112, Knicks 124, Nets 106, Mavericks 121, Timberwolves 124, Warriors 135, Wizards 126, Trailblazers 127, Lakers 115, Bucks 131, Celtics 125, Suns 120, Kings 109, Clippers 134, Golden State Warriors 124, Nets 116, Heat 105, 76ers 118, Cavs 112, Hawks 101, Knicks 122, Celtics 127, Pistons 109, Grizzlies 117, Jazz 111, Nuggets 118, Mavericks 109, Lakers 120, Pelicans 102, Bulls 100, Bucks 112, and Suns 107, Clippers 116. As I said, it was All-Star weekend. They had the dunk contest, the three-point contest, and then the big game. Team LeBron versus Team Giannis. This year it was won by Team Giannis, 175 to 184. Jason Tatum was the MVP for Team Giannis with 55 amazing points. But a lot of work and a lot of money was raised for charity, and that was the main thing. The conference standings in the East. The Celtics are 42 and 17. One game in front of the Bucks, 41 and 17. 76ers, a third on 38 and 19. The Cavaliers, 38 and 24. Nets, 34 and 24. The top six are locked out by the Knicks, 33 and 27. And then we get into the play-in contenders. The Heat, 32 and 27. Hawks, 29 and 30. Wizards, 28 and 30. And the Raptors, 28 and 31. In the West, it's much more clear-cut, with the Nuggets miles clear on 41 and 18. Second place, the Grizzlies on 35 and 22. Kings are third, 32 and 25. Clippers are 33 and 28. Suns are fifth, 32 and 28. Mavericks 31 and 29 round out the top six. And the four in the playing slots, the Pelicans are 30 and 29. Timberwolves 31 and 30. Golden State Warriors 29 and 29. And the Thunder round out the top 10 on 28 and 29. Some important games coming up. Pacers v. the Celtics. Cavaliers versus the Nuggets. 76ers versus the Grizzlies, Timberwolves versus the Trailblazers, Lakers versus Golden State Warriors, Wizards versus the Knicks, Hawks versus the Cavs, Bucks versus the Heat, Bulls versus the Nets, Golden State Warriors versus the Rockets, Clippers versus the Kings, Knicks versus the Pelicans, Grizzlies versus the Nuggets, 76ers versus the Celtics, Bucks versus the Suns, and the Hawks versus the Nets. We finish off with football and some catch-up fixtures in the Premier League. Match day 12, Arsenal 1, Manchester City 3. This weekend saw match day 24. Aston Villa 2, Arsenal 4. Brentford 1, Crystal Palace 1. Wolverhampton 0, Bournemouth 1. Brighton 0, Fulham 1. Everton 1, Leeds 0. Chelsea 0, Southampton 1. Nottingham Forest 1, Manchester City 1. Newcastle 0, Liverpool 2. Manchester United 3, Leicester 0. Tottenham 2, West Ham 0. The top four in the league are as follows. Arsenal still lead the way, played 23 with 54 points. Man City are second, played 24, 52 points. Manchester United are third, played 24, 49 points. and Newcastle are fourth, played 23 with 41 points. Match day 25 this weekend coming. Fulham versus Wolves, Everton versus Aston Villa, Leicester versus Arsenal, West Ham versus Nottingham Forest, Leeds versus Southampton, Bournemouth versus Manchester City, Crystal Palace versus Liverpool, and Tottenham versus Chelsea. The two teams that aren't playing this weekend are Manchester United and Newcastle, who go to Wembley for the Carabao Cup final in what should be a fantastic game. They're third and fourth, respectively, in the Premier League. The highlight of result from last week's European action was Manchester United's brilliant 2-2 performance in the Nou Camp against Barcelona. This week, they have the second leg where Manchester United will be looking to take advantage of Old Trafford to go through to the round of 16 and knock Barcelona out of the competition. The WSL is back with match day 14. Manchester United versus Leicester, Everton versus Aston Villa, Manchester City versus Tottenham, Reading versus West Ham, Arsenal versus Liverpool, and Chelsea versus Brighton. The top three in the league see Manchester United leading the way, played 13, 32 points. Chelsea are second, played 12, 31 points. Manchester City are third, played 13, 29 points. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everybody, what an amazing show again. The last one of February. Can't believe when we're back next week, we'll be into March. Thank you so much to our two amazing global female superstars, Vicky Lozada of Roma and Spain, and in the world of horse racing, Holly Doyle, currently on the sidelines, but one of the best women jockeys on the planet. In fact, one of the best jockeys on the planet. Throw in our SLB Sports Roundup, which brings you a little bit of all the greatest sports around the world. And thank you for listening. We know you'd love the show. Thank you to you, as I said, the listeners. Thank you to our great stars that we've interviewed on the show. And thank you to Johan, Rafaela, and the team at UK Off Radio for this amazing platform that we're given. We will see you all next month and next week.